Chapter 15. Meeting the Rachel. The Pequod now sailed southeastward toward the equator, through quiet seas where we did not see another ship. This strange calm felt ominous, as if terrible events were coming. One day, in the deep darkness which comes just before dawn, we were sailing past a group of small islands when the men on watch, Flask was one of them, were amazed and terrified to hear the sound of wild and terrible crying. One of the men said it was the voices of sailors who had just drowned. Ahab did not hear about this until later, when he came on deck. Flask told him, saying he thought that this was ominous, but Ahab had an explanation. The islands were the home of a great number of seals, and the cries they had heard were from baby seals who had lost their mothers. This explanation made some of the men feel even sadder, because many sailors are superstitious about seals, who can look very like men, with their round eyes and intelligent faces. And this heartbreaking noise really did seem to have been ominous, when later that day there was a loud cry from the masthead, followed by a rushing sound. The crew on deck saw the lookout falling through the air into the sea, and a small number of white bubbles appearing in the water. Maybe he had fallen asleep at the masthead, as we all so often did. The life buoy, a kind of small wooden barrel, was thrown into the water from the stern where it hung. However, the long days of burning sun had dried the pieces of wood which made the barrel's sides, so there were spaces between them. The barrel filled with water and slowly sank to the bottom of the sea, following the sailor. We never found him, and some of the seamen said they now knew the reason for the terrible cries they had heard. Ahab told Starbuck to replace the life buoy, but there was no barrel small enough or light enough to use, and nobody wanted to make one. They only had one thing on their minds, the killing of Moby Dick. Queequeg solved the problem.
"Use him coffin," he said.
"Use a coffin as a life buoy,"
cried Starbuck, much surprised.
"A strange thing to do, I think," said Stubb.
"It will make a good enough one," said Flask.
And so Queequeg's coffin was prepared to go to sea. Its top was fixed tightly so that the water couldn't get in. Then it was hung over the stern of the ship. The next day, the Pequod met the Rachel, another Nantucket whaling ship whose captain, Captain Gardner, was well known to Ahab. The Rachel sailed quickly toward us, taking all the wind from the Pequod's sails so that Ahab had to stop.
"Bad news, she brings bad news," I heard one of the old sailors say, as the captain of the Rachel jumped into his boat and was rowed quickly toward the Pequod.
"Have you seen the white whale?"
shouted Ahab.
"Yes, yesterday. Have you seen a whale boat?" came the reply.
Ahab's face was suddenly full of joy, but when Captain Gardner climbed on board the Pequod, all of us could see from his pale face that something was wrong. He told us how three of his boats had been chasing a group of whales. Those boats had been led a few miles away from the Rachel when the enormous white head of Moby Dick suddenly rose up from the blue water very near to the ship. Captain Gardner ordered another boat to be lowered from the Rachel to chase Moby Dick. He had then seen the crew of the fourth boat harpoon the white whale, and mountains of white water fly up into the air. But he saw nothing more. It often happened that a harpooned whale would pull a boat for miles, so they had not been worried immediately. Darkness fell, and the Rachel picked up the first three boats, and then they had started to look for the fourth one. They had lit fires in the tryworks so the whaleboat's crew would be able to see where the Rachel was, and they had searched for the missing boat all night. After he had told his story, it became clear why Captain Gardner had boarded the Pequod so quickly. He wanted help with his search. He wanted the two ships to sail 4 or 5 miles apart in the same direction, since two ships could search a bigger area than one. Stubb turned to Flask and whispered,
I've never heard of two whaling ships looking for a lost boat in the middle of the whaling season. I think somebody in that fourth boat must have stolen the captain's best coat or his watch because he's so anxious to find the boat.
Then Captain Gardner suddenly cried out,
My boy, my own boy is part of the crew. He's only 12 years old. For God's sake, I beg you to help me. Let me use your ship for 48 hours. I will pay you. You must, oh, you must, you shall help me.
His son, cried Stubb. Oh, it's his son he's lost. I'm sorry I said what I did about the coat and the watch. We must save that boy. But what does Ahab say?
The boy has drowned,
one of the old seamen said quietly.
I heard him. We all heard him. His voice was one of those we heard last night.
Ahab's face was grim as he listened to the captain. He said nothing, and he did nothing. He looked so cold and hard, it was as if he was made of metal. Captain Gardner went on.
I will not go till you say yes. Do for me what you would want me to do if you had lost your son. Do it because you have a boy, Captain Ahab. He's just a child now and is safely at home, but he is the child you had in your old age like I had mine.
He stopped and looked hard at Ahab's face.
Yes, yes, I can see that you will do this, he cried,
and he spoke to the crew of the Pequod.
Run, men, run, and get ready to sail.
Avast, shouted Ahab to his crew. Do not touch a single rope.
Then, slowly, he spoke to the captain.
Captain Gardner, I will not do it. Even now, I am losing time. Goodbye, goodbye. God bless you, man. I pray that I can forgive myself, but I must go.
Mr. Starbuck, Ahab went on, in 3 minutes, make sure the strangers leave the ship, then sail onwards.
In a hurry, Ahab turned away and went down to his cabin, leaving us all silent and the captain of the Rachel looking amazed. Then, without speaking, he hurried away. He seemed to fall into his boat, not to step into it. Soon the two ships were sailing away from each other, but for as long as we could see the Rachel, she was sailing backward and forward, going to every dark area of sea. And we also saw that all her sailors had climbed up the rigging so that they could see in every direction. The white waves rushing up over the bow and falling from the rigging looked like the Rachel's tears for the lost boy. From that time, there were no more smiles on the Pequod, and no jokes. There was no happiness or sadness, no hope and no fear. All feelings had disappeared, and nothing was important except the mad old man's hunt for Moby Dick. Ahab was always on deck, either standing still with his whalebone leg placed firmly in one of its holes, or walking without stopping between two of the masts. Day after day and night after night, he stayed on deck, sending men for food when he had to eat. His face always looked grim, and his beard grew long and rough. Fadala, who had always been a strange man, became even more strange. He too would stand still for hours on deck, as if he was always on watch. Although both men never seemed to speak to each other, it was as if there was some strange connection between them. After 4 days without any of the lookouts seeing a spout, Ahab decided to be a lookout himself. He made a net and fixed it to a very long piece of rope. He sent a seaman up the rigging to throw one end of the rope over part of the masthead and bring down the other end to the deck. Then he got into the net and asked Starbuck to pull him up to the masthead. It was strange. Although Starbuck was the one person who argued with Ahab, he was the one person who Ahab trusted to do this. One fine day, when the blue of the sky met the blue of the sea so that it was impossible to tell which was which, the air was soft and warm. The sun shone on a gently rolling sea, and white seabirds could be seen flying high above us. Ahab walked across the deck and leaned over the side of the ship, looking down into the water. Starbuck seemed to notice how the beauty of the day had reminded the old man of the heavy sadness inside him. He went and stood near him. Ahab turned.
"Mr. Starbuck,"
he said.
"Yes, sir,"
replied the mate.
"Oh, Mr. Starbuck, on a day like this one, I harpooned my first whale when I was a boy of 18. That was 40 years ago. 40 years of whaling. 40 years of danger and storms. And of those 40 years, I have not spent more than 3 on land. I married a young wife and left her the next day to go on a voyage. What a fool I have been, Mr. Starbuck. Why have I done this? I am no richer or better than I was. I am old and tired, and it is so very hard that I have just one leg to carry my weight."
He paused, then continued.
"Come here. Let me look at you. It is better to look at a man than to look at the sea or the sky, because I do not feel so lonely when I do that. You must stay on board when I go to hunt Moby Dick. You have a wife and child, and you must go home to them."
"Oh, Captain," replied Starbuck,
"why should anyone hunt Moby Dick? I understand, of course. You want to go back to your wife and the child you had in your old age. Let me change the course of the ship immediately. How happily we would all return to Nantucket."
Ahab did not reply. He was looking away from Starbuck and speaking again to himself.
"What is it that leads me on to do this? Is it Ahab or God that is making me do this thing, which in my heart I know I should not do? Mr. Starbuck."
But Starbuck, hearing Ahab's mad words, had run away from the captain with his face as white as death.